My name is Anna Bodkin. I am a writer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the way you found to do your work. You're in Hana now.
I didn't choose it. It fell upon me. So I got this out of the blue phone call in August, and I picked up the phone and I said, "This is Anna," and the voice on the other line said, "Hi, Anna. This is Bear Lopez." And I said, "Hi, Bear Lopez," because I couldn't think of anything else to say. And then I fell aphasic for about 20 minutes, during which Barry explained that I was awarded this amazing fellowship in a writer in ethics and community, and that it comes with a short residency in Maui. And I really didn't have any words.
Oh, so you're here via the Merwin Conservancy?
No. This is, so I'm here as a recipient of the Barry Lopez Writer in Ethics and Community Fellowship.
Oh.
So it's not, it is a gift that was completely unexpected from a writer whose work I have carried to wars with me. I mean, uh-huh. You know, this is, so it's a tremendous, it's a mantle for me. It's a, uh-huh. a tremendous honor.
He chose the place for you. He put you in Hana?
He put me in Hana, yes. And so
why?
Well, you know, I was reading about Maui, and this is what I learned, and you probably know this because you're from Hawaii, but I learned that Maui was a very unsuccessful fisherman, but he did hook an archipelago and hauled it out of the sea, and then he got the sun to slow down so that his mother's laundry would have the time to dry, and then he pushed the sky higher to give humans more breathing room. So in a way, he was a writer, right? He was creating space-time. And he also did something that we as storytellers try to do. We try to hold up the sky and make more breathing room. So I think it's absolutely, absolutely fitting that I'm in Maui, in Hana.
How does it feel to you?
Yeah. I don't think I've found the words yet. I arrived early yesterday morning. I have been walking, and it's almost, it feels like a pilgrimage so far. It's, you know, I'm careful around places. I haven't really had a chance to read very much about the pre-colonial history of Hawaii or the colonial history of Hawaii. I read a little bit. I read some fairy tales. So I'm kind of walking and very slowly and feeling my way through this peopled landscape and listening to the rain right now.
Is that a rather usual modus operandi for you?
Not really. Normally I come very well read. This has not been the case on this visit. But I think maybe this is what I need. Maybe I need to just pause and you know, another one of the five writers who bestowed upon me the fellowship is Frank Stewart and Honolulu, and he is part of this anthology that just came out called Hearth. And in this anthology, he has a story, an essay about home and hearth, and in it he talks about pausing and the necessity to pause, to allow us for a caesura to reassess and So I think maybe this is what I'm here for. Maybe I'm here to reassess a little bit and pause.
That sounds good. You know, sometimes we're hurtling forward in our usual way of progressing, and new things could be found by different means.
Absolutely.
You know, the places you've been to, we can list them, and they are, you know, just kind of brief flashing pictures in our imagination. Chechnya, Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, trying to imagine Mali.
Well, to imagine Mali, it's very simple, actually. You imagine Maui and then imagine the opposite.
But the life there, I mean, you've chosen people whose lives I truly have wondered about. And I wonder, okay, considering all your experiences, this phrase, we all want the same things out of life. Is that true?
I think so.
Yeah. What is that?
We want comfort. We want to be not hungry, and we want our children to not be hungry. We want our children to be alive. We want our children to be alive. Some sort of security, you know, a sense of tomorrow that many of us don't have. You know, the basics, shelter, community, kindness.
That sense of tomorrow, what's that? How does that work in different contexts?
When you have to struggle for survival, tomorrow, I think, tends to shrink. So, you know, for many in the West, there is a certainty that there will be tomorrow or next year. We make plans, you know, we plan our vacations. Weddings, people plan a year in advance. That is a luxury for a lot of people in the world, including in the West. People who live on the margins financially, economically, people who live, who are not the denizens of you know, of the societal hierarchy. You know, it's a good question, because so many of us take it for granted that it's not even something that we think about. I grew up in the Soviet Union, and tomorrow was, you know, it was uncertain, or dreary, or both. And for a lot of my friends, tomorrow is not a guarantee, and it's not a guarantee for their children, it's not a guarantee for their loved ones, their kin, their homes. I have dear friends who live in Mali. They're nomads. They don't have stationary homes, but now there is a war in Mali, and people like them have been attacked by sedentary people. So I don't have a sense of tomorrow for my friends. I don't have a sense that my friends, that if I come to visit my friends in Mali in 2 years, they will be there, that that family will be there, that they will be alive. And that, you know, and that is a, that is how life is for a lot of people in the world. So maybe when we talk about it, I consider storytelling a kind of curatorship, an invitation to encourage compassion. And maybe through this storytelling, I hope that we can challenge the reductive narrative of the world, and also encourage love, you know, in greater sense, love toward ourselves, love toward other people who may not be very much like us, other people who we don't know.
How do you encourage love?
By encouraging people to hear other stories, mm-hmm. and listen and imagine looking at the world through other eyes. So every story gives you another set of eyes, I think. Any story gives you another set of eyes. And so I'm encouraging you to see the world through the eyes of my fishing friends in Senegal, who go out to sea daily and come back with or without catch. I invite you to see the world through the eyes of my friends in northern Afghanistan who weave carpets for a living. And so it allows you to be surprised, and I think a sense of astonishment and a sense of surprise are important to feel love.
And to be able to identify with people on such a basic human level, you know, through their relationships with their family, through the food that they work so hard to prepare, through the ways that they prepare it. These are working at something that maybe, it works more towards love than even something like commitment or, or something like that. Because, look, do you consider yourself an activist?
Probably.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, artists are wondering how to combine activism in their art and how to avoid being didactic or prescriptive.
Yes, definitely.
You found something.
Well, thank you. I think I'm still looking. I think looking is a state. I think finding is very dangerous. I think looking is very important. I think because findness suggests that your curiosity has been sated. But if you're looking, it means that you have to stay curious somehow, and then you stay open and stay loving.
What has been the hardest thing for you to do in the midst of all this hardship? I mean, you've gone to live with people who do not have easy lives.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing to check against, right? My hardship compared to what my loved ones go through is, I have a very privileged life in very many ways. I think the hardest thing is being apart, being away. I'm always far away, almost always far away from people I care about, and that's difficult. A good friend just lost a small child, in Senegal, and I called him, and we didn't even speak on the phone. We just kind of breathed. His wife and I breathed on the phone for a little bit together. That's difficult. I wish I could have been closer. Not only to support my friends, but also for me. You know, it's hard to experience the life of your loved ones remotely.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's hard. I think also that a lot of us, especially in the United States, where people often live at such great distances from their families, know this feeling. A lot of us have children who are in different states or different countries. Some of us have parents who are in different states or in different countries. So I think that there is a practice there of being away. But, you know, the trick to remaining human, I think, is to not allow this practice, these muscles to ossify, these muscles that allow us to feel for one another and the yearning to be close to one another. I think that that's a difficult thing to maintain.
Despite our connectivity, huh?
Well, you know, this connectivity is very superficial, I think. Speaking of activism and artistry and art, a dear friend of mine was taking part in a show. She's a visual artist, and she asked me to write something for the show, and the show is about grasping the current state of the planet, you know, hurricanes, unprecedented cataclysms that are caused by climate change. And I was thinking how curious it is that the more we learned about the world, the more we lost intimacy with it. So connectivity, yes, super exciting. You know, I can call people at any time in any part of the world, and they can call me. But where is the intimacy in that? I think that's where art comes in. That's where storytelling comes in. I think art is there as a means of reflecting the world back at itself at unexpected angles.
Art is there if you can make me feel your closeness to that Senegalese fisherman. You know, people maybe wonder how they should respond to knowing suddenly about these lives. You know, should we write checks, start a nonprofit? You know what I mean? Western responses, maybe.
Well, I think I don't have an answer. I think, you know, my answer can be... You can say that it is very vague, that love is very vague. But I think feeling something is invaluable. And if the response is not instead of, but as a result of feeling something, then that's very important. That's what compassion is. That's what we're talking about, where compassion becomes.
I don't know if people can change without feeling something.
No, I don't think there is any reason to change without.
You know, you. What is it about boundaries? Help me understand how you look at that term, the idea of boundaries.
Well, you know, plainly speaking, I grew up behind the Iron Curtain. I grew up in the Soviet Union. I thought that I would never leave the country because we weren't allowed to. Then I ended up being a war correspondent, which means that I trespassed all sorts of boundaries, you know, emotional, physical, political, front lines, but also boundaries of the... boundaries of reason, my mother would argue, you know.
Yeah.
I think the older I become, the more I'm curious about how we erect boundaries, what boundaries are, what are personal boundaries. I observe myself shift boundaries for friends or lovers and erect them for situations I don't like. Why? What does it mean when I'm building a boundary? It's a kind of, excuse me, it's a kind of regiment, right? It's a kind of establishing of something against chaos, because we're supremely uncomfortable with chaos, humans. So then you can ask, why am I uncomfortable with chaos? How do I change if I erect boundaries? How do I grow? But also, how do I protect myself? There have to be boundaries, right? Necessary protection. What is that necessary protection? Who determines that it's necessary? It's a question that I think, you know, it's life's work, boundaries. I think it may be a curiosity kindled by my background, but it also, I think a lot of philosophers and psychologists and psychotherapists experience this curiosity too.
People on social media deal with boundaries every day.
Or don't.
Or don't. Yeah, I know. Yeah, could I ask you, what's your son doing these days? What did he find interesting in life?
Well, I just actually spoke to my son. We speak every Thursday here. You know something personal about me now. My son is in college in Ohio. He is a visual artist.
Really?
Well, he actually is a cartoonist, so that's both visual art and storytelling. It's a combination.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be fun to see what he does?
Yeah, for me too. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he's becoming an adult, and he's adulting. he is a kind and very sensitive human. I'm very inspired by him. I learn from him. We talk about art and the meaning of it every time we talk, because now we're both in the same boat. You know, he's decided that this is what he wants to do. And how do you... You know, how do you stand up to your own inadequacy before the suffering of the world, which I think is what artists grapple with, right? Our own inadequacy to the pain. And no matter what we do and no matter how much we do it, there is no solution. We are not bringing solutions, or we're chinking away at something. But if we stopped, can you imagine how bland and uninspired our deaths would be and lives?
Our deaths would be, yeah.
Well, you know, if we're talking about paying attention, encouraging people to pay attention to compassion and to love. I mean, wouldn't you rather just die of heartbreak than kind of wither into the gray? I don't know. Sometimes it feels like I'm patting myself on the back as an artist. And I know that I'm not the only artist who feels like this.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it resonates, you know, and I know and I hear it. Somebody responds, you respond. Somebody else responds. A person decides to write a check, that's a response. A person cries, that's a response.
I guess we've got to stay in the business of feeling things here.
I think feeling is very important. I think everything, you know, every single iniquity in the world is committed out of a failure of love, as Kutsi put it. You know, the inability to love beyond something that reflects your own, beyond your own reflection. To love a thinking that's not like yours, to love a culture that's not like yours, to love people who are not like you, or who you think are not like you. So, yeah, it all comes down to feeling, really.
You've still got the Fisherman's Blues project you're working on. Do you have another location or project in mind?
Well, Fisherman's Blues is, you know, it's published, it's out. I am working on a novel, which is my first book of fiction. It is about migration and identity and home. It is set on the border of West Texas and Mexico. It's about parenting. It's about a mother and a daughter. I guess it's about parenting at the time of global migration crisis. I write essays. I'm working on some short stories. I think I'm just storytelling as I go.
I don't know what Hannah will do to and for you, but I'm just so glad you're there absorbing it. I think you're going at it in the right way.
Thank you. Thank you. That's important for me to hear, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, you know, if I were to put you down in the next location, I mean, I've always wondered what it would be like to be a nomad. And what it'd be like to live in Afghanistan. The next thing, if I were to design a project that I wish you'd do on an atoll or tiny island living in the South Pacific.
I've never lived on an island, so this is interesting. Yeah, thank you.
Much aloha to you, Anna. Thank you so much for your thoughts today.
Thank you very much, Noah. It's lovely to talk to you.